You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Hey, you want that to go?
Our first news takeout is with Louise Story, New York Times Wall Street and Finance reporter. And Louise, good morning.
Morning.
You know, it got me thinking a couple weeks ago when Tishman Speyer, this huge real estate developer in Manhattan, walked away from a $5.4 billion investment, one of the biggest real estate investments in the world, basically just said, take it, banks, we can't pay anymore. It got me thinking, hey, why don't I do that? Turns out, according to the New York Times, more and more people are thinking about walking away from their mortgages.
That's right.
What does this mean?
Well, what studies are showing is that 75% is the magic number. What that means is when your house becomes worth only 75% of your mortgage, that's when people really seriously start saying to themselves, wait a minute, these monthly payments I'm making are not going towards owning my home. I'm just giving the money to the bank. And that's when people say, what am I doing? What am
What's
I doing? Should I just default?
Now, how does that mental shift affect all kinds of credit lines and risk assessments and really the solvency of banks? Some of them are holding these mortgages.
Well, the banks are counting on people to pay these. You know, there's a very interesting figure in the Times article today. It says that if you were to make everyone's mortgages and home values equal, if you were to, you know, bring them back up, you know, give them the money where their home has decreased in value, it would cost $745 billion.
Wow.
That is how much money in value we are underwater as a nation on our homes. And banks are counting on people to pay the full value of their mortgages. They don't want to lose this $745 billion. So it's a huge banking question. It's a huge personal question for people. And I wonder, you know, with a more mobile society where people don't live in the same homes all of their lives, if people aren't going to continue, as we're seeing, making this financial calculation and saying, you know, forget it.
Forget it. And quickly, is it measurable, the numbers of people who may have this on their mind?
Yes. So we already know that by the fall of last year, 4.5 million people were at this critical 75% point where they'd be seriously thinking about it. And it looks like it'll be up to about 5 million people. 1 in 10 homeowners.
And 6 million have already foreclosed. Celeste, we were saying that this morning already.
That's exactly
right.
So
it's like 10 Detroits. Thank you, Louise.
Thanks.
Now, for another takeout, we're going to go to the Boy Scouts. They're turning 100, and they've decided it's time to reinvent themselves, in particular some parts of America that doesn't know them quite so well, like Hispanics. Marcos Nava is the Hispanics Initiative's team leader for the Boy Scouts of America, and he's spearheading the new outreach effort, which has a pilot program in Denver. Good morning, Marcos.
Good morning.
How many Hispanic Scouts do we have right now?
Currently, we have about 130,000 that have declared themselves to be Hispanic Scouts.
That's out of 2.7 million.
That is correct. Uh-huh.
That's a tiny slice and doesn't even begin to represent the number of Hispanics who live in the country, right?
That is correct.
So this is the issue. So how do you go out and actually target Hispanic young people and get them into the Scouts?
Well, first of all, the national office has a Hispanic initiative that is just doing that. It's the targeting six consoles, and we actually added, we've been so successful that we added 31 more consoles where it has high Hispanic populations. And we're helping those consoles by setting up some marketing processes to reach out to the Hispanic community and be able to tell them what are the benefits of the Boy Scout program to their families.
Do you think that you know, maybe for an organization that's 100 years old, maybe it's just seen as kind of old-fashioned and conservative?
Well, you know, it's funny that you would say that because I think kids still like to have fun. Fun is never going to go out, and scouting is fun. I can go to a classroom, and I can race, and I can talk to students, and I ask them, who wants to have fun? Every hand goes up. So if we are able to communicate the fun to the kids and the values to the parents, and then, you know, it never goes out of date.
Okay, that's Marcos Nava, the Hispanics Initiative team leader of the Boy Scouts of America. Happy 100th birthday, BSA.
I was a scout. I got almost
Were
no
you?
Merit badges, though. No, I was a fun scout.
You're
had
a
maybe
scout
more
with no
fun
merit.
Than yeah, no merit. Had no merit. Our last takeout from our listeners. Yesterday, Groundhog Day, and Punxsutawney Phil saw his shadow, predicting another 6 weeks of winter, but We had a whole conversation about the film Groundhog Day and how in religious circles, some embrace the repetitive plot twist as a metaphor for going back and fixing the mistakes of one's life. We got some really interesting stories of how that movie has resonated in your life.
Hello, this is Nathan from Ponca City, Oklahoma. I remember watching Groundhog Day when I was, say, 9 and really enjoying it, and thought it was really weird a couple weeks later when the Baptist preacher at church referenced it in his sermon. Well, apparently it's not that weird after all, I guess.
It's Paul from Brooklyn. I saw that movie at a time when I felt I was repeating myself, you know, and I hadn't done anything new or adventurous in quite a few years. The day I saw it, I was so energized. And I said, if my life is going to change at all, it's up to me to change it. And later that spring, I took my bike to Prague, and I rode from there to Budapest. That was one of the best trips I've ever taken. And it's funny, but it was a movie that was the kick in the tail that I needed to make it happen.
Oh, wow. This show is a kick in the tail for listeners to tell stories like that. That's amazing. I love that.
It is, but you know, the conversation that we had about that movie Groundhog Day actually got some people thinking existentially.
This is Kathy Webster from Oklahoma City, and Groundhog Day, to me, is the ultimate existential movie because, absurdly, the character decides he's going to try to kill himself in every kind of possible way, which many people think is the existential quest, but in fact, he ends up trying to improve himself, and one of the best examples of that, he starts to take those piano lessons and dance lessons, and he gets really good by having one piano lesson every single day.
Does it matter that the reason he took all those lessons is to try and get a girl? Does the motivation matter?
Well, that may, in some religions, maybe, yes.
Yeah. You can call us anytime with your thoughts, your theories, your insights, your existential philosophies, 877-8-MY-TAKE, or you can post it on our website, thetakeaway.org.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.